Don't panic. For the next hour, let Steve and Paul talk you down from that ledge, right here on RFI. They're the host who won't cop out when there's panic all about.
For you, it's a point system.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an, like, the face doesn't get judged on its own and the ass on its own, everything. It's like a point system.
Yeah, it's like the Miss America pageant.
And the ass gets a multiplier. Right? It's like, the ass is like two times the score the ass gets plus half of the face. Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Benson. Sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Hey, how you doing?
Nothing you're about to hear is true. And if you want to save yourself a little time, just, you know, turn it off now, because we've already planned to have a really shitty show for you today. We have absolutely nothing interesting to talk about, and we're just going to be boring the whole time. How's that sound?
We're those two guys in the Kentucky Fried movie. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know.
What do you want to talk about?
How long have you been here? I don't care. Speaking of the Kentucky Fried movie, I haven't watched that in a while. I wonder if it holds up to the test of time. Have you seen it lately?
Yeah, it's on Hulu. I watched it probably 2 months ago. I couldn't remember whether it was Kentucky Fried Movie or Amazon Woman on the Moon that had a soundbite that I wanted to use on the show. So, in the name of research, I watched Kentucky Fried Movie, and it was Howard smoking those horrible cigars again?
Yeah. Did a cow shit in here?
But I tell you what, a movie that did not hold up was, and now a word from our sponsor, I think is what it was called, and it was terrible.
What's the frequency, Kenneth?
I couldn't make it more than 15 minutes, and I'm just like, this is stupid, so I had to shut it off.
Yeah, I'm very careful about the movies I bring back from my childhood, because I'm just afraid.
Yeah.
But I feel good. I trust your judgment on the Kentucky Fried Movie. Big Jim Slade.
Yeah, all right. It's completely rooted in the, 81 or whatever, when it was made. But yeah. It's still funny.
You know how in school we used to go to school and the teacher didn't feel like teaching, so they'd just play a movie?
we should totally do that next week.
It's like fuck, man, my parents pay for this school through their taxes.
That's right.
Book rental. I'm here, you get paid just because you're hungover and don't feel like teaching.
Yeah.
But, who you're gonna show that movie. Oh, okay. We're watching Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie.
Oh, okay. or like when I was little, like I'm talking second grade, I was in second grade, and our principal brings in, and we have to watch a movie on fucking volcanoes, which completely terrified the crap out of me, because I was convinced volcanoes were going to erupt my backyard.
Those stupid movies. Those movies are how we got our start. I don't know if you remember.
I think so.
We got our start as a comedy duo because of those movies. Excuse me. We were on the bus talking about those movies, and we were like, what's with these movies they keep making us watch? You know, it's always like the same thing too, man. It's like they'll show a frog, and the frog will just go. And then there'll be some other animal that just goes, tookie, 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 dweet, dweet.
Tookie, tookie, tookie.
My brother overheard us, and he's just looking over like, what is up with those guys? That was our debut.
That's right, because he went home and told your mom they can sit on the bus and talk the whole time and not say a single thing. we've been doing that for almost 2 years now.
It's true. We could talk for almost an hour.
It really is.
And not say a damn word. Oh, man. So those movies. And then, So that's what we should do. If we don't feel like doing a show, we just play a movie. All right, kids. Does anybody know how to work the projector? I'm too hungover to work it.
or what we'll do is like we'll do an entire show where we just go like when we're talking because of the old projectors with the audio. Every once in a while, just go.
Mr. Barrett, the projector screwed up. I don't care.
There was a fine teacher for you.
Mr. Barrett. I have Mr. Gallifaro. His room was right next to Mr. Barrett's room. And the entire time, it sounded like we were sitting next to the monkey house at the zoo. Because it was just...
Well, Mr. Barrett's class was where they sent the bad kids.
Yeah. We'd be sitting there, and we'd look out the window, and there would be kids from Mr. Barrett's class, like, climbing out his window and just, like, running around out in the playground or whatever.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah, because the game was to see how long you could do that before you get caught.
That'd be one of those classes where girls probably got pregnant. I wonder how many girls got pregnant.
Well, none when I was in there.
That you know of.
That I know of or will claim to. Now we had a couple little dudes in our class, and the windows opened up pretty wide. So when he wasn't looking, they'd slip out the window and see how long they could like run around outside before they'd get noticed. Because he couldn't do anything. He'd call you in the classroom and yell at you and make you stand out in the hallway, which you didn't want to be in his class in the first place. So you're like, hey, this is all right. You know. And the vice principal was usually drunk, so he wouldn't walk around and see kids in the hallway.
So what was it about some teachers? Like two classrooms right next to each other. How was Mr. Gallifaro able to keep order, but Mr. Barrett wasn't? What was the difference?
I think it was the fact that Mr. Gallifaro's pants didn't go like up to his nipples. And you could take him seriously. Because, I mean, Mr. Barrett would pull them pants up so high you could, like, you know, you could see stuff you didn't want to see pulled up tight against his pants. And it was just...
My first day in Mr. Gallifaro's class, I walked in and I said, I was like Al Pacino in Ocean's 13. I said, some people that I take very seriously told me I should take you seriously. And I went and sat down. The reason Paul and I are not going to have a good show today is we think that, oh, here you go. Stop listening now and go back and listen to last week's show.
Yes.
Because it was much better.
Yes, it was.
The Swede. It was really nice to talk
yes,
to
Yes, it was. It was like, it was the closest we could come on air to the three of us hanging out together.
It was really sexy times.
Just a sexy time. It was a very sexy time. Hey, go back and listen to that. Forget this show. Forget this one. Come
this
back next week.
Believe me, we've already listened to this one. We haven't even finished recording this one. We've already listened to it, and it sucks. Believe me.
I'm currently editing it, going, oh, God. So, yeah.
How am I going to salvage this?
Tune in next week.
It's like I gotta find 45 minutes of content here.
Yeah, last week I had to cut out content. This week I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do?
You can play the content you cut out from last week.
just intermittent, just squeeze it in.
Yeah. just squeeze it in. So the thing from last week, and I want to take him up on having him on frequently, because the whole thing about how to have what you want in life, it in some ways it makes sense to me, and in other ways it's like it sounds easy enough.
yeah.
And I've read, God knows, I've read like a library's worth of professional development and self-help and blah 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 books, and they all say the same thing. They all say, well, you know, it's you have to decide, and once you've decided, it's like a foregone conclusion and you just go get what you want. And people are lucky to have you, and you're not asking them for something. They need something from you. And it's like, I read that and then I hear him say it and I see the results he gets, and there's no denying that. There's something that tells me that some people have it and some people don't. And then on the other hand, I go, well, yeah, but once you know, can't you make an adjustment in your life to make yourself like behave that way?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Or are there some people that they were just raised in a certain way? And, you know, I was raised in a way that means I will always work for somebody I hate.
Yeah.
And yeah. I will always feel stuck because I will always make just a little bit, not enough money. And I'll always feel behind. And I'll always feel like I have to work for somebody I don't like. Whereas Michael goes through life. I mean, Mike Hill, that is, goes through life, you know, going, all right, what's next? I'm tired of this band. Now what am I going to do? You know,
I need some sexy time.
I need some sexy times. I'm going to go date Gwen Stefani for a little while.
That's right. And we're going to hang out at Adele's house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's already told me he's more than happy to come back on the show. So I had actually thought about that after the show. I'm like, what if, you know, have him on the show and let him explain a little more of, you know, how his system works. And I think the comment you made last week about how, you know, the Midwest, we're raised a certain way versus the coasts.
Yeah.
And he seems to have a coastal attitude towards things.
Yeah.
So I would be, and it's so goddamn true that we are. We're, you know, we were raised from birth to think that way. Whereas, right. You know, and as soon as when he was talking about his book, did he talk about that on the air?
He mentioned it.
Okay.
I don't know if it made the show. But
okay. Well, when he was talking about his book and how he goes into it with the attitude of like, how did he say it? Like, he wanted them to know that they needed his book.
Yeah.
And
if you are lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it was.
To publish my book.
And I'm like, yeah, I can't tell you how many cover sheets I wrote for novels that I never heard back from the publishers because my letter was completely it was like passive aggressive without the aggressive part.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I never realized that that's apparently what you have to do. So, and I still find it a little bit.
But there are several levels here because on one hand, I get it. And I could talk about it all day long. I could be like, sure. I mean, the person that's reading your letter is a human being. They they want to make their boss happy. Right, because they live in fear as much as anybody else. So they're like, all I want to do is not piss off my boss, right? And all their boss wants to do is find a good novel to publish, or not even a good novel, but a novel that won't fail and piss off their boss, right?
Right.
So if you're like, please publish my novel, please, you know, then it's kind of like, oh, I can't take a chance because... Oh, there's a million of these. Please publish my novels. And this could be, you know, this could piss my boss off. And as opposed to, hey, I'm writing to you because, you know, I think a lot of your company, this book will be published. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity before somebody else picks it up. Suddenly they're going to go, shit, what if somebody else publishes it? My boss finds out that I saw it. and didn't publish it. They're going to be pissed off, you know? Okay, so that's one level. And I could talk about that all day long, and I could come up with, like, anecdotes and examples and blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, putting it into practice seems to be a whole other thing because I want to see somebody somebody who loves me. Don't you want to dance?
That's...
I don't think I got that right. I think that's
she's going, dude. Whitney's going on like 5 years of being sober, man. That's great.
Dude, that's cold blooded. Check it.
So is she now.
Sorry.
I'm not sorry. I just say I am. So I don't get in trouble. It's like when you get caught. I'm sorry. What are you sorry about that I got caught? Anyway, you want to see somebody.
Well, okay, for every dude who wrote the letter that said you'd be lucky to publish my book, all right,
mm-hmm.
for every one of those that gets their book published, I'll bet you there are 10,000 who wrote that letter and the person read it and went, I've seen this letter before.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, this is one of those letters this is one of those letters that's supposed to make me feel afraid not to publish it. Oh, I get it. You know, trash.
Right.
So my point there is that can't be it. And there has to be something else to it, like lots more. I wonder if it can, and what I wonder is, can it be taught? Or is it something you have to get at a visceral level?
Well, that's why we need to do Michael's Sexy Time Secrets to Success.
Michael's Sexy Time Secret to Success. MSSSTS.
Get that on one of them rubber bracelets you wear, right. Wear on your wrist.
That's right. MSSSTTS. MISSSTS. What I started to say earlier is I want to see the guy who was raised in the Midwest, mm-hmm. by, you know, parents who survived. Well, okay, maybe I'll read that book, Rivet Head. Ooh, maybe that's the secret. Because if you think about it, that book, Rivet Head, was about a guy who's fourth generation factory worker,
mm-hmm.
right? Bored out of his skull.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote this book, and now he's apparently, you know, he's a published author. So maybe there was some, I tend to believe that it's not unsimilar to an alcoholic hitting rock bottom. I believe that.
Well, that I can relate to. Please elaborate.
There you go. Finally, our listeners are like, oh, wait, shh, turn it up.
Like, he's speaking to us.
I had turned it down just waiting for Do It Indie Radio Hour. But I heard the words alcoholic. Turn it back up.
And rock bottom.
If you think about somebody trying to quit drinking, right? Mm-hmm. They can say all the words. They can go through all the steps. They can come up with all the reasons they should quit. Mm-hmm. But until they hit a point in their life where it's quit drinking or die, you mm-hmm. know, they don't do it. So I almost wonder if, you know, it's kind of like we will never have the life we want until the life that we've settled for will kill us, you know?
We, ladies and gentlemen, we've just had what alcoholics refer to as a moment of clarity on this show. I think we hit it. Yeah. They're being real now.
Turn it up.
What amazed me.
Is that Skinner? Turn it up, man.
Turn it up, man. What amazed me was I was blown away that there were actually publishing companies in this country that didn't want to publish, like, 14-year-old reading, you know, books for 14-year-olds that are, like, you know, fantasy franchises. Because I thought that's all that got published anymore in this country.
So my buddy Dave, who mm-hmm. Went for his Master of Fine Arts at Butler University, mm-hmm. he knows those publishing companies. And they do. They don't sell a ton of books. Like, the whole book thing is still figuring itself out. It's sort of like the music industry in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
They still haven't figured out what to do next. But they still are. I mean, they're reading literature and they're You know, they're publishing. They're even publishing books of poetry for God knows what reason. I mean, no, who the hell buys a book of poetry? It's like, I love poetry, but I don't buy books of poetry. Although, who was it that said, with a poet in your pocket, you'll never be alone? And I thought, I wonder if the poet has any say in that matter.
I mean, get in my pocket.
It's like Peter Dinklage is a poet. Get in my pocket, Peter Dinklage. It's like, I drink and do things. Anyway. So, yeah, there are those. Interesting. That's an interesting topic, actually. Because I was thinking about audiobooks the other day. The other day being, I believe, yesterday. And my thought was, audiobooks right now are some voice actor reading a print book, right? Well, what were movies when film first came out? It was basically stage plays filmed.
Yes, right? Yes, they were. They took a lot from stage plays.
And even the acting style, right?
Yeah, the acting style, school, the makeup, the backgrounds, everything was stage plays.
And so when they got this new technology, they didn't really know what to do with it. So they said, well, let's do the thing we've always done, stage play, and just film it, right? And now, you know, years later, they're actually doing things with film that, of course, you know, obviously could never be done on a stage. So I was thinking about that with audiobooks. We're still in the early, early, early stages of fiction, nonfiction, you know, sort of the spoken word, written word being an audio experience.
Right.
And so I was thinking, what if a book, what if somebody wrote, in air quotes, a book that was meant for audio?
You know what? I would be willing to bet that's already a thing.
Well, it's like we talked a couple of weeks ago about Pokemon Go and other things that are probably out there that are like Pokemon Go. It probably is a thing somewhere. Somebody's doing it, but it hasn't. There hasn't been the, maybe like that NPR series Serial that everybody loves. You know, it's sort of like, is it a podcast? Is it a series of short stories? What, you know, what is it exactly? So it'll be interesting. I wish I could live. This is, you know, I'm not afraid of dying, but I am pretty bummed that I don't get to stick around a while to see how everything turns out. Hey, write that one down too.
Yeah. Because that's never been said before either at all. I know exactly where you were going with that. But you know, the thing that kills me about audiobooks, because I've started listening or experiencing them off and on here more frequently now than before. Why is it like an audiobook of like okay, take, I don't know. I'm trying real hard to read Salem's Lot, which I'm falling asleep doing so.
Real hard to read.
That's
Salem's
right, Leroy. Anyway, where's Leroy come from?
No, Ringo. It's Ringo.
Ringo.
I'm trying real hard.
Try real hard, Ringo.
Salem's Lot.
Well, anyway, so I looked it up and I'm like, all right, well, you can listen to the audiobook for, it's like 7.5 hours. Well, why the fuck does it take me a month and a half to read that shitty book, but somebody can read it in like 7.5 hours? What is it about an audiobook that does that? I don't read like a novel in like 7.5 hours.
That's a great question, actually. I'd never thought about that. And it's got to be, it's not just simply that that person reads faster, because I can read as fast as somebody can talk.
Right.
I don't know. And I have sat down. I've been known to sit down for an hour and a half and read without stopping.
And you get like, you know, 20 pages in.
Yeah. And you know, after 10 pages, I'm like, oh, I'm tired.
I'm nodding off. Yeah.
Yeah. And the kids are like, okay, Dad, I have to go to sleep. Stop reading Charlotte's Web.
But but she dies. You heartless little whatevers. You don't understand what this does to your dad. I say, Arlo, oh my God. She was reading with Mice and Men for class last year, towards the end of the year. And I'm like, oh, I'm loving this, because that is one of my, as you well know, that is one of my all-time favorite books. Well, I'm sitting at home, and I get a bing, a little message, and I look, and she's like, they killed Lenny! She was just like, she come home, she was just like, I came out, come here, honey, and I gave her a hug.
Come here, honey. I know. They're there.
Welcome to life.
They're there, honey. I know.
I know. I feel your pain.
It's a cold, cruel world. I think we should take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe when we come back, in fact, we should use the break to write down two books apiece that we're somewhat excited about, or we've read recently, or we found interesting that we want to talk about. And we should do that, because I thought of two while you were mentioning of Mice and Men. Well, let me modify that a little bit. One is a book that I recently listened to on audio.
The other is a copy of Jugs.
Oh, what a cute little pink bunny rabbit. Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
And pat him and pat him and...
You're hurting me. Put me down, please.
And rub him and caress him and...
I ain't no bunny rabbit!
Welcome back to the Don't Panic radio show. Less than 30 minutes left until you are out of your misery listening to the Do It Indie Radio Hour. Can't
the They're not listening to this episode. We just got to keep reminding ourselves that.
Yes. Cammy's cause is coming up. I don't know who Cammy is or what her cause is, but I know it's a good one. And a bunch of bands and live broadcast this weekend or last weekend, depending on when you hear this. And they'll probably talk a lot about that after they get done making fun of us.
Yes.
All right. So you mentioned Arlo reading of Mice and Men and Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny being meeting an untimely demise. I was driving to work the other day listening to an audiobook, and I on Indiana 37 between Martinsville and Bloomington, Indiana, I was bawling uncontrollably. Now, I attribute at least 47% of that to mild persistent chronic depression, but the other 53%.
So you weren't bawling, you were bawling. Okay. you're doing the drive. You're like leaning back in your car. It's like, no, I wasn't bawling, Paul. I was bawling. Oh, okay.
Bawling is one of those slang terms that I still don't know what it means.
Urban Dictionary, man.
I have to check it out.
Urban Dictionary.
I mean bawling. I mean crying. As a man, I believe it's important to show your daughters that men cry.
That's right. But not over sissy type stuff.
Right. I also believe it's important to show your daughters that when a man cries, it means he's being weak and you should not marry him.
Wait, what?
I don't know. So anyway, I'm driving to work. And I'm listening to this thing, and it is a fantastic book. It's actually, I believe, here's one of the differences between an audiobook and a physical book is I've never seen the physical book. I've only listened to the audiobook, and I believe it's a collection of short stories. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those. And there seem to be a lot more of these lately. It's one of those collection of short stories by the same author that it kind of blurs the line between novel and collection of short stories, because all of the stories, it's sort of like, and it's not a new thing. It just seems like there are more of them. If you think about the Martian Chronicles, like the stories are somewhat connected. The characters are somewhat recurring. In this one, all of the stories are first person, and all of the narrator is always the same guy, which is the author, right?
Right.
But
right.
He points out several times that it's fiction. However, most of the incidents actually happened, but he added fictional things to like pull it together or to make a point or to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he changed a lot of the names and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it was written in the late 80s, published in like 1990. But recently, I don't know who, Tom Hanks or somebody noticed it and decided they wanted to produce an audio version. And Bryan Cranston reads it. And I don't know why he did this, but right in the middle of it, at exactly the wrong time, somebody goes, he goes, "Say my name." And they go, "Heisenberg." And he goes, "You're goddamn right." I don't know why they put that in there. It didn't fit anything. But anyways.
It was to remind you of who Bryan Cranston
That's
was.
Right. "Say my name, Bryan Cranston. You're goddamn right." I remember when I was watching Breaking Bad. I watched it. I like binge watched it on Netflix or whatever. And I was really into it. When that scene happened, and he goes, "You're goddamn right." I actually stood up off the couch and I was like, "Yes." Okay, I'm an idiot. I immediately was almost as ashamed as I get every time I masturbate. Not quite, but almost. Anyway.
So what was
speaking of shame?
Please, what was the book?
Speaking of shame. So I'm crying, right? The book is called The Things They Carried. And it's by Tim O'Brien. And he was, grew up in Minnesota, small town Minnesota, liberal, totally anti-war, and was drafted while he was in, like, he was in his, like, senior year of college and was drafted. He actually ran to, he was going to run away to Canada, but he, but he got to the border and, like, was staying, like he was out of money, out of options, out of time, you know, out of whatever, straight out of Compton. And
straight out of Minnesota.
So he stayed with this guy in this cabin right on the border. All he had to do was cross the lake, and had a moment where he decided not to run because he was afraid of the stigma that would be attached to it. His dad was military, you know, his hometown was like conservative and like, you know, patriotic. And so he says, you know, I was a coward. So I went to war. And
that's great. Yeah. That's a great line. That's a great tagline.
Yeah. Yeah. So he ended up, he was a grunt in Vietnam and just goes through, and the whole thing is just full of great stories, and the way he tells them, you know, I had thought I was over Nam. I guess you never really get over Nam. I thought I was.
No, man.
I thought I was.
No, man.
I know.
You can never get over. You're never totally over Nam.
I'm a, you know, I always feel a little bit weird talking about Nam in front of you because I know what you went through. And what I went through pales in comparison.
Hey, man. Everybody's war is everybody's war, man.
That's true. Everybody.
It's all relative.
We all have our own Nam, don't we?
Unless you're Ted Nugent.
He so he was talking about death, and he interwove this really, the way he interwove the two stories was really great. But there was one story about the his buddies and Nam dying, and this girl when he was 9 or 10 years old that he like loved, and he said, I don't mean puppy love, I don't mean crush, I mean love in whatever profound sense love means. We loved each other, right? And she died of cancer like that year, and he was talking about going through that and comparing it to what he lost in Nam, and I was just like losing it going I was 60 miles an hour straight up, tears running down my face, and I thought, how in the hell can a I'm serious, man. It had to be 47% mild depression and 53% that book, because there's no way a grown-ass man ought to be crying at 60 miles an hour on Highway 37 between Martinsville and Bloomington. That's all I'm saying.
No, man. It's totally normal. It's like...
Perfectly normal. Perfectly all right.
You'll be fine, man. Just muddle through it. No, recently I read... Lord of the Flies. Now, everybody, I think we're born as humans, since that book came out, we're born, it's in our DNA, we know the story of Lord of the Flies. Nobody has to explain it to us. We know what it's about.
Yeah.
But I read it because I'm like, you know what? You know, I saw the original movie, and then I saw the remake back in the 90s, I think. And I'm like, yeah, fuck it. And so I bought the book and I read it. And you know, like, you know it's not going to end well for Piggy. There's just, it's not going to end well for that poor kid.
Yeah.
And the way Piggy died, you're just like, you poor little bastard. You know, it's just like, you know, his parting words are about, like, we have to have rules. We have, bam, when the rock hits him and he falls into the water and he dies. It's like, and then the house falls silent for a moment as Dad sits there and goes, Poor Piggy. You know, so I get, no, I totally get that. Plus, being a parent fucks you up anyway, because you're like, something triggers in your head right. That, like, certain things will get you on an emotional level because you're on a whole different playing field now.
I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old, so I had that shit bracketed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my of mice and men moment, although it didn't involve the kids. One that did involve the kids, or one of the kids, mm-hmm. was, as is well known by now, Paul Volstorff turned me on to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. Mm-hmm. And I've been listening the shit out of these fucking podcasts.
See, I'm gonna edit this to where you basically say Paul Volstorff turned you on hardcore.
Perfect.
Anyway, please continue.
But these, so I've been through the history of the Persian Empire, mm-hmm. touched on the Greek Empire, the Roman Empire, the Roman Kingdom, the Roman Republic. Mm-hmm. And smidgens of the Roman Empire, plus mm-hmm. ancient history, like even before all those, a little bit of Mesopotamia, a little bit of, you know, of course, Babylon, Mesopotamia, Egypt. I've been like all of that, you know, I've been listening mm-hmm. to all that in a very interesting way, in ways that you never heard in your history class, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't remember any dates. I have a vague, like, that was 2,000 years ago. That was 2,500 years ago. That happened before that thing. Those things were kind of around the same time, which is good enough for me. That's what I've always wanted, you know. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted, like, so were the Greeks were before the Romans, I'm pretty sure, but were they at the same time? And the Greeks were, like, getting themselves established, the Romans were in their infancy. But then they mm-hmm. coexisted for a little while. They had a couple of border skirmishes. The Persian Empire was kicking everybody's ass before the Greeks and the Romans. Now, mm-hmm. well, where does Egypt fall in? Well, Egypt was first, but they got their asses kicked then. And then the Romans come along. They Cleopatra was basically, you know, Greek. Well, the Greeks came along and made Egypt basically Greece. And so I'm just like... This is great. I'm finally getting out all of it. Something mm-hmm. I never could get in school. And so mm-hmm. The kids started school 2 days ago. My sixth grader's coming home with her syllabus. I'm like, a syllabus? That hasn't happened yet. Oh, they're calling this middle school. Okay.
Yeah. My daughter's doing the same thing.
So the syllabus includes ancient history. And mm-hmm. in a way that is different than we've talked about before, because usually when we talk about it, I go, come on, that was ancient history. But now it's like, ooh.
That was about something you did like 2 days ago. Exactly. That was ancient history.
Ancient history. So now I get.
Well, you got to bring up when I shit on the lawn? That's ancient history.
You shit on the lawn
you
one
know,
time.
You shit on the lawn. Exactly. One time.
I fixed the furnace last winter, didn't I? You would think fixing the furnace would get me one shitting on the lawn.
You're the dumb guy who shit on the lawn.
So
last winter, you were the miracle worker who fixed the furnace. Summer, you're the guy that shit on the lawn.
Right. So I went from, come on, that was ancient history, to, come on, this is ancient history.
Right.
And she's excited about it. She's a little bit jaded. Or I don't know if jaded is the right word, but a little bit, got a little bit ruined on history last year because it was a lot of, in 1874, this happened, and in 1764, you know, it's a lot of, like, remember this date and this location on the map and this person's name. And you just, as a kid, and I remember it, I just kept going, I think I can remember that, but I have no mm-hmm. idea what it means. mm-hmm. She's going from that to, wow, there are so many reasons to understand the time frames and the people and the events.
Well, I think our problem with history, being, you know, growing up in the 80s, our problem with history in school was our history teachers were either burned out hippies or like aging neo-Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
So we never really got, you know, they told us what happened and then we moved on.
Yeah.
We never really got, you know, you never, what was that movie Nick Nolte was in? Was it Teachers? We're like.
DC Cab?
He was in more than just DC Cab.
Tell him you're Batman.
No.
This is Batman.
He was in this movie called Teachers where like they hauled off the one teacher who, the history teacher was crazy. Because he'd come into school and he was the guy who played Richard Mulligan. He'd come into school dressed up as George Washington and he would do all kinds of stuff. And they hauled his ass away. Cause he was crazy because he made history come alive. You know. They don't want that.
Right.
They just want you to be able to go, this happened on this date, you know. Fill in this little dot with your number two pencil and move on.
Right.
You know, I think now, you know, it's not so much that way.
Well, and I was talking with some friends a week or two ago about math and like eighth grade, seventh grade math. And you know, we were saying, if you think about it, eighth grade's, oh, no, it wasn't some friends. It was a guy I hate. No, wait.
So some people you hated.
So we were talking about
fuckers that I hated.
We were talking about math, and we were talking about the math teachers our kids have. And it was a friend, it was a parent of one of the kids from school. And we're like, if you think about it, a seventh grade math teacher doesn't really need to know that much math, you know? And he's like, this guy is an engineer from Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, that teacher looked at me and he's like, dude, you had way more math than I did as an engineer. I'm just a math teacher. What do you expect? Right. If you think about it, all you really need to know is like seventh grade level math. And you teach that year after year after year. It's not like you need to know, how to get a damn rocket on the moon in order to teach seventh graders math. History's probably the same way. You don't have to be an expert in history and all the, you know, totally understand all the trends and the reasons for everything. You probably just need to know what they want seventh graders to know, which is probably a list of dates and names and people and name the capitals of the whatever.
Now see, I lucked out. I had a really good, as I contradict myself, I had a really good history teacher in seventh grade.
You said dick myself.
Yes, I often, well, I'm double jointed, but I had a really good history teacher in seventh grade, but conversely, I had my seventh grade math teacher would come to school and I had her first hour, seventh grade. She came to school smelling like whiskey.
Nice.
At like 7 o'clock in the morning and would fall asleep on her desk. Wow. So, apparently you don't really have a big, you don't have like a lot to do in seventh grade math.
I'm just saying. You know, I don't spend enough time thinking about, like, how the teachers we had when we were kids were human beings, not unlike you and me, who were probably hungover, drunk. Not to say you and I are always drunk, but...
But we're certainly most always hungover. No, it's, you know, they're just people.
Yeah.
You know,
not anymore, probably. Most of them are probably no longer people.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, bag of bones. All right. Well, I think we've probably stunk this one up enough.
Yeah.
Kids,
go back and listen to last week's episode.
or fast forward to next week's. Another option. Because I've heard.
That's true.
I've already heard next week's. It's pretty damn good.
And it's getting good reviews. And
I cried during the first half, and then I laughed during the second half.
Well, apparently it's been well established you cry a lot anyway.
That's so true. I'm a big sissy. You hurt my feelings. I'm going to cry. All right. Well, let's not torture them any longer.
We should do an episode on our teachers. Yeah. That would be interesting.
All right. Do you have a joke for us this week?
No, alas, I do not.
Arlo's too busy reading of Mice and Men.
Yeah, she's too busy. She's still crying over it.
Has she read To Kill a Mockingbird yet?
I don't want to talk about it. She couldn't. I don't think she's my child. She couldn't get into it. I'm like, well, I don't understand these words coming out of your mouth. Whereas my son, who is, of course, named after To Kill a Mockingbird because his name is Mockingbird.
I thought it was Kill.
Yeah, Kill. I named my son Kill.
Kill Shaw.
That's right. He like absorbed it. I literally saw him just like, and it went into him, and it was gone. She tried and couldn't quite get into it. But I think she was just in a bad place at that time. So we're gonna try it again soon and see how that goes.
So no joke.
No jokes. Okay.
Alas. I have a joke. Donald Trump.
There.
Hey.
Hmm.
Don't click, because Do It Indie Radio Hour is next. For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. Nothing you just heard was funny or true.
Just listen to next week's episode.
When you wake up in the morning and the light has hurt your head, the first thing you do when you get up out of bed is hit that streets a running and try to beat the masses. Go get yourself some cheap sunglasses. Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah! I spied a little thing and I followed her all night in a funky fine Levi's, and her sweater's kinda tight. She had a West Coast strut that was sweet as molasses. Now what really knocked me out was the cheap sunglasses. Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
yourselves some thick black frames. With the glass so dark, they won't even know your name. And the choice is up to you, cause they come in two classes. Rhinestone shades of cheap sunglasses.
Seven sound.